It's sure good to have you here. We've really enjoyed having you here and just seeing so many warm, smiling faces. I'll just tell you a little bit about the history of Glen Eyrie and bring you up to the present, and then we'll talk a little bit about General Palmer, and we'll take a quick walk through the castle. If there's anybody who's been on it and just doesn't want to go again, feel free just to get up and go ahead downstairs if you like. Okay. The story starts with with William Jackson Palmer, who was born in Delaware. Many of you probably know the story. When he was about 5 years old, he moved with his family to Pennsylvania. They were Quakers. After he graduated from high school, he went to work for a small railroad there in Pennsylvania. And shortly after that, when he was 19, his uncle invited him to go to England and study railroading. They felt that was the coming thing. So his uncle paid his way, and he went over and spent quite a bit of time in England and later on in the continent to study railroading. He supported himself by writing articles for railroading journals, technical magazines, and came back to the U.S. in the late 1850s, went to work for the Pennsylvania Railroad in the treasurer's office. Shortly after that, of course, the war between the states broke out, and after an agonizing decision, he being a Quaker, he joined the Union Army because he believed very strongly that slavery was wrong and that he should play a part in rectifying that. He apparently was quite a good soldier. He was promoted to the rank of Brigadier General while still in his 20s. As far as we know, he was the second youngest general in the history of the United States Army, the youngest being General Custer, whom General Palmer did manage to outlive somewhat. As soon as the war was over, he resigned from the Army, went back to his first love, which was railroading. Came out here first, working for the Kansas Pacific Railroad. They hired him to survey a route to the Pacific. He actually surveyed four routes. Recommended that they build a line west to Denver, from Denver south through Raton Pass, and then west to the Pacific. The reason for that is there were several places along the way where cities could be developed. There was a lot of good arable farmland along the way, and there were three coal fields that could be tapped for energy. But the Denver and Rio Grande, Kansas Pacific, didn't buy his ideas, so he resigned from the Kansas Pacific and started the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad. Came out here in 1871, bought 10,000 acres of land at prices ranging from 25 cents an acre to $1.25 an acre. As you know, it has gone up some. He started building his home in the valley here. He had married a New York socialite by the name of Mary Lincoln Mellon, and he was bringing her, his bride and her family out. So he started building a 22-room house here and then laying out the city of Colorado Springs and then expanding the railroad. It was a narrow gauge railroad, which is more efficient and can go more places than a standard gauge. He eventually wound up as far south as Mexico City and then all through the west here. In the late 1880s, his wife, whom he called Queen, had had a series of heart attacks, and the doctor recommended that for her health, she should go to a lower altitude. So they both agreed that she should go back to New York for vacation and see if her health improved. So she took the three daughters and went back to New York, and her health did improve. And in 1894, they decided to go to London for vacation, and he was going to meet them over there. They went, and she died in London in December of 1894. General Palmer went over and got her remains and the three daughters and brought them back to Glen Eyrie. That was in 1894. 10 years later, in 1904, he started building the castle, this building. He selected the rocks from an area south of here called Bear Creek Canyon. He selected rocks that had a flat surface. Many of them had moss and lichens growing on them. He had each rock packed in a barrel of sawdust, brought up here and unpacked. He left two foremen in charge with instructions that the workers were not to touch the face of the rock with a hammer or chisel. And then he went to England looking for furnishings for the castle. Shortly after he left, the two foremen, of course, got into an argument about how deep they should go with the foundation for such a massive building. So they wired General Palmer and asked him, and he wired back, "Go as deep as you need to go to make the castle last 1,000 years. So they dug and blasted down to solid rock. The castle rests on solid rock. It hasn't settled. There's not a crack in the exterior of the building itself. In 1906, he was out riding with some friends in the Garden of the Gods, and though he was an excellent horseman and loved the outdoors, one of the ladies in the party had a skittish horse, so he loaned her his horse. Lemoore took her horse. The horse stepped in a hole and threw him, and it broke his neck in 3 places. He wasn't expected to live, but he did, and lived for almost 3 years, and died in March of 1909. When he died, the 3 daughters, who never liked Glenary nor the American West, turned the estate over to a local real estate agent and went to England. The real estate agent sold Glenary to an Oklahoma development company. They were planning to turn it into a resort area. They were going to use the castle for a clubhouse. They were going to ring the valley with small cottages, put in an 18-hole golf course, a couple of trout lakes. But fortunately, never really got off the ground. And a man by the name of Alexander Cochran came along. Mr. Cochran had inherited $70 million, and he bought Glenary for a summer home. He had just married an aspiring opera singer, and he carried her across the threshold in the foyer there, and she very quickly expressed no keen interest in cleaning a 67-room castle. So they closed it up. They boarded it up, turned off the water and the power. Later on, they built a home across the way over here we call the Pink House. Very plush, well-built, beautiful home. He built two or three other buildings, small log cabin-type buildings. In 1927, he decided to move his family abroad and sell Glenary. Couldn't find a buyer, so he had a public auction. Auctioned off all the furniture in the castle. Then he broke the estate up and sold it in parcels. When they started, it was 2,500 acres. When they finished, the estate consisted of 700. The people who bid highest for the 700-acre estate couldn't raise the money, so it sat here for about 10 years. In 1938, a Houston oil man by the name of George Strake bought it for $500,000. Also bought it for a summer home. Also did not use the castle. Mr. Strake did some remodeling on some of the buildings, kind of rebuilt General Palmer's water system. Enjoyed the place. In 1953, decided to sell it for what he had paid for it. Couldn't find a buyer. Later on, he learned that Billy Graham was looking for a place where he could have a retreat center for businessmen and government leaders. And he was impressed with the results of a Graham crusade in Houston, particularly with the young people. So he lowered the price to $300,000 and offered it to Mr. Graham, who initially took the option. Later, after a lot of prayer and talking with his advisors, Mr. Graham decided not to get involved with Glenary, but to concentrate his efforts and his money into television and the large crusades that he's famous for. So he offered the option to Dawson Trotman, who was the president of the Navigators at that time. And Dawson accepted the option, which was a big step of faith because that required the Navigators to raise $100,000 in 6 weeks to make the down payment. Now, the budget for the year, 1953, was $100,000. The men associated with the Navigators who were knowledgeable about finances told Dawson it was impossible, that there's no way they could do that. But Dawson, who didn't know anything about finances, went out and spent 3 weeks getting organized and printing brochures, and in 3 weeks raised $100,000. The largest single donation came from a couple in California who mortgaged their home and donated $4,000. Came down to the last day, and there was less than $50,000 in the bank, and the money started coming in. Late that afternoon, Dawson was talking with the businessman in Houston. Dawson was in Houston, and the businessman asked him how much he needed. He said, well, right now we're $8,000 short. So the man said, well, I'll see what I can do. He came back that evening, and he said, Dawson, I've talked to everybody I know, and together we raised $8,000. Here it is. Dawson said, well, I just talked to the headquarters in California. Western Union stayed open late, counting the money. The money's in, so we really don't need it. You can give it back. Tell them thank you very much. The man said, Dawson, you never know. You might need it, so go ahead and keep it. The next day, it was discovered that in addition to the $100,000, we needed $5,000 for back taxes and $3,000 for insurance. So somebody knew how much we needed. The final payment was made 10 years later in 1963. At that time, we started building some other buildings and remodeling some of the castle. We remodeled all the bathrooms. We put carpeting throughout the building, cleaned it up a little bit. We have built since then three lodge-type buildings, guest housing. We built a new maintenance facility and the new administrative services building. So that brings us up to the present. To go back a little bit, General Palmer, if he wasn't a genius, he certainly was close to it. He turned the electric lights on here at Glen Eyrie the same year that New York City turned on their first electric lights. He had his own coal-burning electric generating plant on the grounds here. He had one of the first telephone systems west of the Mississippi here at Glen Eyrie. He had several phones in the castle, some running to the other buildings on the grounds, and then one line running out to Colorado College, which he had helped to found. He had the most complete weather forecasting station in the nation, with the possible exception of the National Weather Bureau. And every day he would figure out the weather and call out to the college and let them know what was coming, which was a pretty good trick, Colorado. When he built this building, he built it with a nickel-plated brass pipe throughout the building for the plumbing. When we purchased it in 1953, the water had been turned off for over 30 years. We turned it on, turned each of the faucets on, let them run a few minutes, and have been using it ever since. There wasn't a leak in the system. He put the wiring inside of steel conduit so that when we bought it, the cloth insulation was deteriorating. So we rewired the whole building by tying the new wire to the old one and pulling it through from the other end. We didn't have to tear out any paneling or any walls to rewire the whole building. He designed this building in 1904 with central vacuuming throughout the building. All the maid had to do was connect a 75-foot vacuum hose to outlets placed around the building, turn the system on, and she could vacuum anywhere in the building. In 1906, after he was paralyzed, he realized very quickly that lying around in bed all day, you get bed sores. So he had a waterbed made for him. It was in 1906. So there really is nothing new under the sun. The room that we're in was the book hall. It had it lined with bookcases. There was some overstuffed lounging-type furniture in the room. There were some animal heads around the room and some animal skins on the floor. In the center of the room was a large table with a stuffed golden eagle on it. The name Glen Eyrie, by the way, is actually Glen Eyrie. Means the Valley of the Eagle's Nest. And on one of the rock formations here, we have a large eagle's nest that they built right into the side of the rock. It's about 8 feet high and about 5 feet wide. And the nest has been there since sometime before 1871. And the place was named after that nest, the Valley of the Eagle's Nest. He did some entertaining in this room. Not the usual type. General Palmer loved kids, and every special occasion he could think of, he would run a caravan through the city and bring all the kids out here and have a party for them. Several times he had a circus here. He had a couple of Great Danes that he used for elephants, and had some squirrels and rabbits and so forth, and then he'd make some popcorn and some homemade ice cream. Every Christmas, he'd put up a big tree over in the corner here, bring all the kids out, let them decorate the tree, and then have a gift for each one of them. Besides this, there are 66 other rooms in the castle. There are 21 bedrooms and 18 bathrooms, I think. There are 24 fireplaces, of which 20 are imported. The fireplace behind me here is one of the Native American fireplaces. It's Indiana limestone. The mantle is 12 feet high. It's also Indiana limestone framing the doors and the windows in the room. There's another fireplace in the room. It's located up in the balcony. It's also Indiana limestone. It's considerably smaller than this one. The general had a system with the fireplaces. He felt like if the wind were blowing, he could just let the fireplaces exhaust up out the chimney, and the wind would carry the smoke away. But if the wind weren't blowing, the smoke might settle in the valley here. So he designed the system so that you could change the flue on the fireplaces if the wind weren't blowing, turn on an exhaust fan in the room below us. It would draw all the smoke to that area, take it through a tunnel, and it would exhaust out a chimney that sits on top of the hill up here by itself. Then he designed his electric generating plant with the same capability. There's another large chimney that sits on top of the hill back this way that exhausts the electric generating plant. The room below us that you will wind up in was the general's recreation room. It's about the same size as this, a little lower. The things that we know he had in it, on the back side of the columns running the length of the room, there were two bowling alleys. And then on the other side of the columns, there were two pool tables. He bought two of the first three pool tables made for the Brunswick Company in 1891. We still have one of the pool tables and two benches, a spectator's bench and a player's bench. And those are three of the four pieces of original furniture that we still have. The three chandeliers here in the room are the only three original lighting fixtures that we have. Are there any questions?
Did he,
yes, ma'am.
Like music?
Did he like music? Apparently he did. There's a music room downstairs. He had a grand piano in there. This, the front of the balcony there, there's a musician scroll. So I assume that was some sort of orchestra balcony or something.
Was he a Christian?
Was he a Christian? We're not sure. We'll find out one day. He was certainly a very moral man, but we're not sure whether he was Christian or not. Yeah. Okay, let's divide up, and if people from here over would go with Don Poindexter, Don will take you through on a quick walk through the castle. The tour that we're taking through the castle is a little more than the average tour. So if you should come back sometime for a tour, just a public tour, you won't see quite as much as you see this evening. Okay? If the rest of you just sit still a minute, I'll try to entertain you. A little soft shoe.